Name, rank, and serial number.
Sure. My name is Gary Downing. I work for Go Corporation from 1990 to. Gee, I don't remember. Do you remember, though? Anyway, it was the first example
long time
of
ago.
The first example of a pen-based computer. Mm-hmm. And when we first started the company, we wanted to create the notebook itself, but then we later changed our vision to focus only on the software.
On the software.
But this prototype was the one that we actually walked around with in kind of proof of concept.
And you were technology evangelizing.
I was technology evangelizing it. I built the training program, and I worked on the documentation and the software development kit. So just about
wow.
every piece of making this, taking this from technology to the real world,
right,
was really my part. So this is the documentation that came with it. There's a book that Robert
Carr. A cool case reminiscent of today's Mac Mini case.
That's right. That's right. Everything about it. So
everything about it was sort of very futuristic.
It was. It was. And it was
at
very high-end. It was intended for kind of a more of an executive type.
Mm-hmm.
It was really targeting.
I remember Windows came out with a wobbly
Windows
thing
for
called
pen computing.
Windows or...
Yep.
Yeah,
Windows for pen computer. There's actually a famous story about that inside of. I think that Jerry Kaplan wrote a book on it called Startup. And the interaction was that we actually had Bill Gates come into Go, and you know, of course, sign all the non-disclosures.
He signed the NDAs.
He brought a buddy with him, and they. They listened to our whole Dog and Pony show, and we talked about the technology. We demonstrated the proof of concept on this very tablet. And you know, he said, okay, well, think about it. Bottom line is he wrote a rather terse email that said, you know, you really should be using Windows for this. You know, thank you, but I don't. We do not wish to build, you know, any office applications for this, which was our original purpose. The guy that came along with him was the founder of Windows for Pen Computing. So, which is very typical,
typical
Microsoft seal ideas. And
that.
So anyway, that's plenty of reading, documentation, but everything. We have Go alumni parties about every 3 to 4 years.
Love to come.
And they're Jerry Kaplan, kind of, you know, between Jerry Kaplan and Robert Carr, they hold these parties, and, you know, it's a pretty tight group of people that still keep in touch. And we're, you know, the people, of course, the technology, even the handwriting samples
right.
that are built into this are in the Microsoft tablet. So they acquired the technology.
That's
the same guy who
same
wrote all
guy.
Of that is, it's made
the
it.
Ghost in the machine.
It is. It is.
The what in the machine?
The thief.
The thief in the machine.
Yeah. So I mean, you know, it was truly amazing because the guy Greg Hollander, who did all the handwriting recognition, he brought it to the Go parties, and all of our recognition was perfect. You could tell. I mean, it was obviously customized for us.
Right.
By
right.
us.
You were drinking the Kool-Aid and it just worked.
So all those profiles were kind of built in.
That tablet always reminded me of from the original Star Trek series, and those women would come up to Captain Kirk and he would sign something on something that looked
yeah, the
oh,
captain's
like
log
right.
or bones would have some kind of medical report. I mean, you never could see that it was paper because that would be passe, so
right.
it was something
it was
like this.
Right. About that size, right.
In fact, Discovery Channel 2 weeks ago was at the Digibarn filming a show called The Science of Star Trek.
Oh, God.
The yeah.
Salt Shaker.
Yeah, the Salt Shaker. The Salt Shaker, right. And the Cray supercomputer we have is modeled after a piece of Trek by Seymour Cray, who loved Star Trek.
Mm-hmm.
So it looks like Star Trek.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Down to the Naugahyde upholstery over plywood for the seats around the bottom of the Cray. It's basically what Kirk's chair was made out of on the bridge.
Oh, my God.
you know, shiny, weird, cheap Naugahyde.
Yeah. Yeah. Doesn't surprise me.
So the applications, you guys had a
yes.
handwriting text-to-text.
So so the actual handwriting recognition is built in.
Right.
The third-party applications was really where my focus was in trying to convince third-party software developers
right.
to build applications. And it was an extraordinary success because, you know, at 1.0 we had some 40 to 50 applications.
And then the next cube had.
Oh, you bet, you bet. But there was a lot of, you know, real innovation beyond. I mean, it wasn't just a black, you know, cube.
Right.
This was a whole new way. It changed the metaphor, many of the concepts, the whole document model, an application framework. All of that was brand new, and it really came from Go. So it's some of the my most proud work was came from this because you know people really understood the vision. They went with it. They didn't necessarily make a lot of money, but you know they leveraged it in many many ways.
Mm-hmm.
So it it has life. You know, I worked for Palm afterwards.
Okay.
So you know
you
I saw.
Didn't work on Newton at all?
No, I didn't. No. Newton was the competitor at the time. So,
a friend of mine, Larry Yeager, was developing the handwriting recognition on that.
Yeah.
You remember him?
I don't know him, no.
Yeah. He lives now and always lived in Bean Blossom, Indiana, and worked remotely.
Oh, really?
Can you believe that?
Really?
Bean Blossom.
I thought the original guys that did the handwriting recognition were from Russia.
They were the Paragraph people.
Paragraph, yeah.
And then Larry took it over.
Oh, I see. I've actually come across those guys. They're still around here in the valley somewhere.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think I've seen them.
They were doing Vermal stuff.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then they moved on after that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're definitely around. So, yeah, we talked with them after Newton came out, and they were talking about putting the recognition into a pen point. But, you know, it's a different model. You don't have handwriting.
Sure,
Anyway, what fascinating technology.
We have a grid, some of the grid OS tablets, too.
Yeah.
I don't know what year. They're all from, I have like a handful of them, and they're from Burlington Northern Railway.
Oh, my God.
In these leather cases.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
One of them is bootable.
Oh. Well, this is bootable. Actually, at the Go alumni parties, they always bring chargers and discs and, you know, kind of show it all coming up again.
Wow.
You know, I don't even bother keeping the power charger around, but you know, people have all the peripherals. You know, the EO tablet. Have you ever seen that?
Yes,
one?
I have. Yeah.
Do you have one of those?
No.
So this one of the guys in the Go alumni has one of those, and you know, I mean, that was obviously an evolution of it. It's quite beautiful.
Yeah, it is.
So,
in fact, I do sort of birthday party for computers that people have forgotten about, then there's no birthday party, I hold it. So the year before last, it was the Xerox Park, they had a computer called the Alto.
Oh, yeah.
And no one was having a birthday party for it. I was 30 years old. And I went to Xerox Park and I said, you guys are having the birthday party for the Alto. And they said, no, we can't. It's too much in the past. So I had a big event for 2 days. We got Altos up there and we had all the original people and panels. And last year I did Maze War, which was a 3D game.
God,
it was 30 years old. This in 1974, we got it running on an IMLAC for 1972.
Oh my God.
We got an IMLAC working.
Oh my God.
We built a network to talk to it. We built Maze War on the modern network. We built an emulator for DEC System 10, a PP10, and we got the original hardware. And there were kids like your age playing. Maze War was the first first-person shooter, but it was from the time of the Apollo landings. But it just simple line art graphics, but kids his age were playing and having a good time.
Yeah.
So it's like, okay.
Yeah.
1974.
Yeah.
First Halo. I don't remember.
First Halo.
I don't remember.
Yeah, it was actually.
When we were kids at all.
Yeah, I played TRS-80s and.
Well, Pong, everybody kind of played.
Yeah. Wasn't it over here by the little shack that they first had it?
Yeah. This whole area is sort of, I mean, it's people's garages, and that's why I started the DigiBarn project because. I said, wait a minute, there's a park person called me up and says, I'm about to throw out the following. My wife can't take it anymore. That half the garage is filled with these park things. And I said, these are the only ones in the world. You can't throw them away.
Mm-hmm.
I have a barn, 5,000 square feet. It's all built out. And just I'll come and pick them up.
It's in the hills, right?
It's in Boulder Creek.
Yeah.
And you know, I just couldn't let this go. And then I started, I'd make...
Collecting.
And then, so I would do pictures of it. I would put them up online, and then within 2-3 weeks, someone would have Googled that page and started sending me information. So that's how the whole thing started. So it's like a museum from the bottom up that's being told by the people who did it, not by some curator somewhere or some journalist.
Mm-hmm.
It's told by the people, so like your voice would go on the site, and someone will find the page I'll make of this, and then send additional information. It'll just keep growing for years and years and years, and then the whole ghost story would emerge piece by piece, and I'll come to the one of the parties, mm-hmm. and then I'll put the whole ghost story together. And the Digibarn gets so much traffic now, it's way up on the top of Google's rankings.
Yeah,
so it's this vast amount of traffic. I had to move the server to another co-location. So it was breaking. We were on Google's homepage for 3 days when Jeff Raskin passed away. They put his link on the homepage of Google worldwide. And so the traffic came down, and when it linked, there were three pages, Jeff's homepage, Wiki, and us. So the millions and millions of people were coming through.
She's breaking up, Captain.
She's breaking up. It was. I mean, I didn't know what...
The lithium crystals can't take it.
Well, I logged in the server, and the traffic was like went straight up, and I couldn't figure out what was wrong or what was happening. And then somebody emailed and said, go... Just start Google.
Right.
And
then you saw
it. And I saw it. So then after that, tons and tons more people pouring their thoughts and ideas. And mm-hmm. it's all done by hand. Mm-hmm. So it's like I haven't automated. Wow. It's just unbelievable. It's like 1,200 hand-built pages now and about 150,000 objects.
Wow.
Movies. And now people are sending whole movies and DVDs of stuff. So mm-hmm. I'm ripping all that. I'm putting. So that's a whole section called Digibarn TV. Which is all shows and interviews.
Oh, my.
Wow.
And who cares about copyright? Let's put it up.
Really? I mean, you know.
I actually
brought one of these to the Smithsonian, thinking that, you know, they might be interested. And I just never actually physically brought it in there and said,
right.
you know, you guys might be interested.
Right.
But, you know, I mean, I think it does deserve a life, at least in the Valley.
Yeah, and it was... pretty fundamental, and I think what's terrible is the web era starts 94-95, mm-hmm. and all this brilliant innovation that happened before it, if the companies are gone, there's no record of it.
And it appears like someone, you know, just created it. It's all built on a lot of people. Yeah.
Well, this is interesting. When I did the Maze, it took me 2 years to do the Maze War event, finding all the people, and all that huge, huge work. We do this panel, or the original creators of it, who are now senior people at Cisco and whatever. Mm-hmm. They're telling the story of playing this game over ARPANET, this first-person shooter, wasting the ARPANET's precious resources, and how the game worked, how it had levels, and it had you could spoof other characters and had robots, like bots, in the game. And so this guy's telling this whole story. I put it up dutifully online. I get a call from Sony about 3 weeks later saying, this material is going to overturn about 50 patent or patent applications or challenges. And so this one effort, it's prior art that knocks down patent after patent after patent, mm-hmm. and all these fights, and now there's sort of chaos.
Oh.
And so I said, well, there was a good reason to do that, because these people can't claim to have invented something if the prior art is incredibly clear. It's right there. First person speaker, here's a demo, here's a running system on the running hardware. Mm-hmm. It's like a gigantic legal deposition that just knocked down multiplayer gaming, just tipped it over.
Mm-hmm.
And so I said, well, that was good.
Yeah, that is definitely good. Thing. I appreciate that.
Right. The lawyers out.
Yeah.
Use lawyers for what they're good for, to knock down other lawyers.
Yeah, there's a saying, if it weren't for lawyers, we wouldn't need them.
There you are.
Lawyers in 10 words.
Well, we like one lawyer. His name is Larry Lessig. He's at Stanford, and he created the Creative Commons license, which we use on the site, which says you can use all the stuff non-commercially, and as long as you credit the site. So it replaces copyright.
Mm-hmm.
This copyright is now sort of owned by mm-hmm. corporate interests too. So that's, anyway.
Well, good. I hope it has a good life.
It will definitely have a good life. And
I'll definitely get up to there one of these days. Do keep me in mind for future events.
Future events. There's one on Saturday. It's an open house on Saturday.
Oh, great.
It's a sunny day.
So what?
Pigs are out.
Pigs are out.
The pigs.
What's the address?
The address is, I'll turn this off.